Wormwood!
Uncle!
This had better be important. You summoned me from the meeting of the Undersecretary's Guild. What is it?
I've just received word from Lichtspleen that the German humans will bombard my patient's town.
Yes?
And my patient's duties as an air raid warden will keep him in the thick of the danger.
Ah, I see. So we must consider our policy.
Well, that's right. Should we aim at cowardice, or at courage with its consequent pride, or at a hatred of the Germans themselves?
Well, I'm afraid it is no good trying to make him brave. Our research department has not yet discovered how to produce any real virtue.
Oh.
This is a serious handicap, I know. To be greatly and effectively wicked, a man needs some virtue. What would Attila the Hun have been without his courage? But as we cannot supply these qualities ourselves, we can only use them as supplied by the enemy, and this means leaving him a kind of foothold in those men whom otherwise we have made most securely our own. A very unsatisfactory arrangement, but I trust we shall one day learn to do better.
Hatred, then?
Ah, that we can manage. The tension of human nerves during noise, danger, and fatigue makes them prone to any violent emotion, and it is only a question of guiding this susceptibility into the right channels. If conscience resists, muddle him. Let him say that he feels hatred, not on his own behalf, but on that of the women and the children. Let him think that a Christian is told to forgive his own, not other people's enemies. In other words, let him consider himself sufficiently identified with the women and children to feel hatred on their behalf, but not sufficiently identified to regard their enemies as his own and therefore proper objects of forgiveness.
All right. Hatred it is.
But hatred is best combined with fear. Cowardice alone of all the vices is purely painful, horrible to anticipate, horrible to feel, horrible to remember. Hatred, on the other hand, has its pleasures, and it is therefore often the compensation by which a frightened man reimburses himself for the miseries of fear. The more he fears, the more he will hate. And hatred is also a great anodyne for shame. To make a deep wound in his charity, you should therefore first defeat his courage.
Yes, sir. Then I will induce him to cowardice.
Hang on. This is a ticklish business, Wormwood. We have made men proud of most vices, but not of cowardice. Whenever we have almost succeeded in doing so, the enemy permits a war, or an earthquake, or some other calamity, and at once, courage becomes so obviously lovely and important, even in human eyes, that all our work is undone. And this is still at least one vice of which they feel genuine shame. The danger of inducing cowardice in our patients, therefore, is that we may produce real self-knowledge and self-loathing, with consequent repentance and humility. And in fact, in the last war, thousands of humans, by discovering their own cowardice, discovered a whole moral world for the first time. In peace, we can make many of them ignore good and evil entirely. In danger, the issue is forced upon them in a guise to which even we cannot blind them.
Well, then it's a dilemma.
A cruel one, to be sure. If we promoted justice and charity among men, we should be playing directly into the enemy's hands. But if we guide them to the opposite behavior, this sooner or later produces a war or a revolution. And the undisguisable issue of cowardice or courage awakes thousands of men from moral stupor. This, indeed, is probably one of the enemy's motives for creating a dangerous world. A world in which moral issues really come to the point. He sees, as well as you do, that courage is not simply one of the virtues, but the form of every virtue at the testing point, which means at the point of highest reality. A chastity or honesty or mercy which yields to danger will be chaste or honest or merciful only on conditions. Remember, Pilate was merciful till it became risky. It is therefore possible to lose as much as we gain by making your man a coward. He may learn too much about himself.
What if what?
Speak up if you're actually thinking for once.
There is a chance that if we don't get rid of the shame, perhaps we could aggravate it and produce something else instead. Despair.
Yes. That's a good thought, Wormwood. This would be a great triumph, and it would show that he had believed in and accepted the enemy's forgiveness of his other sins only because he himself did not fully feel their sinfulness. But I fear you have already let him get too far in the enemy's school, and he knows that despair is a greater sin than any of the sins which provoke it.
What then would be the best technique to tempt him towards cowardice?
Get his mind into a series of imaginary scenarios.
Right.
If A happened, though I very much hope it won't, I could do B. And if the worst came to the worst, I could always do C.
C.
Superstitions, if not recognized as such, can be awakened. So that what was intended to be a total commitment to duty becomes honeycombed all through with little unconscious reservations. By building up a series of imaginary expedients to prevent the worst coming to the worst, you may produce at that level of his will which he is not aware of, a determination that the worst shall not come to the worst. Then, at the moment of real terror, rush it out into his nerves and muscles, and you may get the fatal act done before he knows what you're about. For remember, the act of cowardice is all that matters. The emotion of fear is in itself no sin, and though we enjoy it, it does us no good.
Here come the bombers.
Good. I'll return to my banquet if it's all the same to you.
Thank you, Uncle.
And don't become drunk on the death and destruction. You need to keep your wits about you.
Yes, sir.